Good evening and welcome to the Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Dravenstadt, your host on the first Monday of every month, when we take you on a culinary tour of the Lehigh Valley and its amazing food scene. We'll have two guests on the program tonight. First, we'll have Jean-Paul Hepp, owner of Choco Diem, a maker of artisan Belgian chocolates, and he'll be followed by Tim Bonner from the Taza Stop and the Taza Truck, where you can find Egyptian cuisine. And both have permanent locations in the Easton Public Market just off the square in downtown Easton. The Easton Public Market will be celebrating its first year of operation this April, so we only saw it fit to have two of its merchants on tonight's show. And if you haven't been, I'd strongly recommend that you go. It's a food lover's dream. It epitomizes as much as anything the way the food scene has changed here in the greater Lehigh Valley. So let's get things rolling with Jean-Paul Hepp, and it's okay to call you JP, correct?
Oh, oui.
JP, welcome to the Inside Dish.
Merci.
On Lehigh Valley Art
Merci.
Salon.
Plaisir.
Now, JP, you are Belgian, correct?
Yes, from the north, which is Flemish, basically, like Dutch.
Okay, And you say that Belgian chocolate is considered to be the gourmet standard by which all other chocolate confections are measured. And why is it so special?
Well, in the 19th century, the person named Neumann invented or created, he was the first at least to have the filled pralines, which is the molded chocolate or a truffle, and inside you have a recipe, the secret recipe. Together you make a truffle. Few know that Belgium has the highest density of highly rated restaurant Michelin stars. While we are a very small country, we do have an amazing cuisine. And not only the beers, but it goes from the desserts like the waffles and the pancakes and the chocolates. So we have been known for that. But it's not so much about the solid chocolate than it is about the recipe inside a mold.
Ah, so it's not just the chocolate around the outside.
Oh, no.
It's everything that goes into the final confection.
Yeah. And here it's kind of a new trend to farm to table. In Belgium, small country, it's more about the table on the farm. We are so used to have the ingredients all around us, natural and fresh. So that's kind of the whole history in a nutshell.
So what kind of items can people find at your locations at the Easton Public Market and also in Clinton, New Jersey?
What
kind of items can people find there?
You mean in the store?
In the store, yes.
You go from the... I give classes too. You can go from the solid 100% chocolate, which is bitter, but it's extremely healthy. It's full of antioxidants. Over to lesser percentage to the white chocolate. That's one part, so that's a solid chocolate. Then you have the truffles, of course. Truffles, again, is a hand-rolled. These days it's more like a shell, but hand-rolled originally. Truffle with a recipe inside. And then they have the molded chocolate with a recipe inside or hollow. Because you can do a lot of artistic preparations with chocolates. And recently we had a completely chocolate red mill made, which was inaugurated by the mayor of Clinton. It's a very beautiful piece made not by me. I taught a young student from Rutgers who is learning sculpture to make that piece. It's an amazing piece. I have also other artists who paint on the truffles, customize whatever. That's what makes us strong. It's not only the taste, it's also the looks of it.
And in fact, I was going to ask that. I've seen many of your chocolates at the Easton Public Market, and they're beautiful.
Thank you. They're almost works of art. It is, yeah.
And how much of the visual quality of the chocolates that you make influence the enjoyment? We always think about, the wonderful taste, but...
Right.
The visual, what role does the visual have in terms of people enjoying chocolate?
We say we have a three steps. So traffic coming in the Eastern Public Market, they see those beautiful chocolate. The first reaction is, wow, this is beautiful. I would never eat that, right? That's the first thing. We attract people by the visual. Then second comes the taste. So they bite into it. And since it's a high quality gourmet chocolate, we have them come back. And then the third part is we give a very good customer service. We have a good staff to do so, and we make them loyal customers. That's kind of the approach, a 1-2-3 approach, the looks, the taste, and the service. In fact, we're in the business more of making people happy. I've never, ever seen anyone who, even walking in, doesn't smile, but certainly not going away doesn't smile. There, it has. That's our role. Have to make a little bit of a paradise over there.
Like what you said, to make people happy.
Absolutely right.
Right.
That's, we love that.
And in addition to the look and the appearance and the artistry, a lot of times we talk about flavor, but what role does texture play in terms of delivering chocolate and confections that people like?
Good chocolate is very difficult to make because it's so sensitive to the environment. And I do have problems to make even chocolates during, say, 8 months of the year because the humidity and the temperature in an interplay is working in a wrong way on the chocolate. Chocolate beans, if you ever seen them, half of it is cacao butter. Now, the cacao butter is the part that's most important to make the chocolate sheen or shine, the way we know it, like satin kind of looks. Texture, the taste, the looks in general. So when we make this chocolate and it's too humid or it's off temperature, then it turns into what they call a out-of-temper chocolate. It discolors, it blooms. The fat crystals, the wrong fat crystals out of the cacao butter come out. You can remelt it unless you have already a shell with the recipe. You cannot remelt that. But 8 months of the year is a lot of time where you cannot make your good chocolates. The mass-produced chocolate, what they do is they eliminate the cacao butter and they replace it with oils, vegetable oils. So it's but then it's waxy. It doesn't have the sheen. It doesn't have the taste. It doesn't have the texture. All these things, even the sound of a chocolate. You can hear a chocolate, a good chocolate, whether it's tempered or not.
What does it sound? What does it sound like?
Like the knack of, I don't know how you say that, but knacking a dead branch. How do you say, snapping a dead branch. That would be, you can hear that. So if you don't temper well or you don't have the right chocolate, the good chocolate, you have oils instead, it's waxy. You can't hear the noise. You see it, you smell it, you can, I mean, there's so many elements. All the senses are being worked on with good chocolate.
And I did read on your website that you're a PhD.
Yeah, correct.
In the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, right.
Now, is there some balance between that and what you're doing? It sounds like this is it's an artistry, it's culinary, but it sounds very chemical and scientific,
right? Well, that's where I come. I've been lucky to, my PhD is in biology, so I love everything that's biology. My daughter, the two of us started, in fact, 5 years ago, startup Choco DM in 2010. We went to different courses, etc. I've been lucky to work 23 years for a good pharmaceutical company, get an education from sales, from marketing, technology, and legal even. So that's what I'm using in the business. But what I miss is, in fact, the artistry of doing all these amazing pieces, because I cannot, I cannot take it's not my pride. It's the pride of the artists that I have on my staff. I cannot get credit for the beautiful things that they make. I just make sure my secret is my palate. I've been spoiled for 40 years in Belgium with good chocolates, and I cannot sell something that I don't like. So some items you won't find in my store because I don't like them. And some people are asking, why don't you do it? I can't. I have to sell something that I like. But besides that, that's the taste, that's the Belgium taste, the kind of the selection, the filter. Besides that, you have to make it look great. And that's where all these artists come from. My mission vision from the very beginning, 5 years ago, is I won't make the chocolate per se, but I want artists to help me with even the local artists, even with the recipe, with the looks of it, and with the service. It's not me. I'm just part of a team, and it's Choco Diem that should come out as a brand that is offering high-level chocolates back to the basic, the food of the gods. That was how it was in the Inca time 3,000 years ago.
That's right, food of the gods.
Food of the gods, yes, Theobroma. So the scientific part, yes, it does play a role somehow, but not that big of a role. It's more the analytical part. I've been trained analytically, right? As a PhD, you do that. That's more my role into everything that I look into and that I want to put out in the market.
Now, where does your team find inspiration for new chocolates and new creations? What sort of things do they expose themselves to, and how do they come up with something that's new?
Thanks for that question. So EPM, Eastern Public Market, has 13 vendors inside, great vendors. Now, we have used each vendor's ingredients to make chocolates. So we do that. We customize everything. We have a wine next to us, Tolino, if I'm allowed. We use their wine to make truffles. We have a beer across us. We use their beer to make truffles. Next door, we have a coffee store. We use their coffee espresso to make espresso, and so on and so forth.
We talked about the chocolate-covered bacon from Dunder and Heist.
Dunder and Heist, yes. Absolutely. And even we used cacao powder, believe it or not, with candied salmon. And it works. So that's what we do. We kind of want to customize. You have a wedding. You have your own wine. Bring your wine. We'll make the ganache to make in the chocolates. And it's customized with the name, with the box, whatever. The flavors you want, we do customization.
Now, you talked about Belgian chocolate and how it's different. For people that are used to eating American chocolates or milk chocolate or even things produced here in this country, and you give them the first taste of Belgian chocolate, what is their typical reaction?
Well, honestly, as a joke, I like to joke. I like to teasing. I always tell them, be careful, because there's no point of return here. If you if you take my chocolate, you might be coming back and not going back to whatever you ate before. And, you know, it's true.
Is there a certain look that comes over their face?
Yeah, right. The first thing, surprised, you don't want me to buy it? And then it's, oh, I see what you mean. All right, sorry.
And with what you were talking about before in terms of how it's different and how you prepare it, is that some of the education that you provide across the counter in both Easton and Clinton?
Yeah, we do classes. So I have four kind of classes, the making of chocolate, the tempering, the tasting of it, that's the most popular. The pairing with wines, you bring your own liquor. And then the painting, which is often more for children. But that's the four kinds of classes we give in the public market where they have a great kitchen for us.
And one more quick question. Sure, sure. Why is dessert still important?
Dessert makes me happy, everyone happy, right? At the end of a meal, which was good, and eventually some wine or coffee or tea. And then in Belgium, every coffee store has a little chocolate with a coffee, always. So why? Happy.
It's all about being happy.
It releases some hormones that make you happy too. The serotonin. Yeah.
That's great. Well, AJP, thank you for
joining us. Thank you.
Best of luck with Choco Diem.
Thank you.
And
so
your
much.
Space at the Easton Public Market. So we're going to take a short break. Stay with us for the second half of the Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon. We're glad you can join us for WDIY's monthly program on the culinary arts. I'm your host, Mike Dravenstadt, and for the second half of the show, we are joined by Tim and Hala Bonner from the Taza Stop in the Easton Public Market and the Taza Truck, a food truck that can be found all across the Lehigh Valley and beyond. So Tim and Hala, welcome to the Inside Dish.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you very much.
So the first question for me is, why Egyptian? It's not the most well-known ethnic cuisine. So why Egyptian?
Well, I mean, the easy answer is Hala is Egyptian. She's from Cairo.
Yeah, so I have a bunch of recipes.
Right. And all the recipes come actually from, the base recipes come from her mother and her grandmother. So, but we actually started, when we had the idea in our head that we wanted to do a food truck, we talked about Mediterranean. We were talking about more of a broad palate for average Americans because we weren't sure whether Egyptian would go over well. But we kept going back and forth. We asked some of our friends who are in culinary, and they said, you know what, is there any Egyptian in the area? And we said, no. And are there any food trucks in the area? No. So then why not just do something that's completely unique that would grab people's interest? And actually, it was the best decision we made because Now, you know, people really gravitate towards us because we are so unique, I think. So.
And the safe thing to do would be to do something that has already been done or that other people are doing. But to be the only ones in the market gives you a really unique position.
Right. Well, and as a matter of fact, I think that was also part of the reason why we were called in to the Easton Public Market. I mean, they recruited us for an interview when they were looking for restaurants to go in there. They came to us, I think, because we were so unique and we had a unique brand.
We had a different twist on it. It is Egyptian, but we tried to take some of the recipes and formulate it so that it would open up to a wider mass, but at the same time expose people to the culinary palate of the Middle East, because everyone really knows Greek, right? You know, so that's everything that's, you know, gyros and tzatziki, whereas we're, you know, slowly teaching people about different aspects of the Middle Eastern cuisine.
In fact, I was going to say that Egyptian food sounds exotic.
Right.
I imagine once people become a little bit more familiar with it, you're breaking down some of those barriers and making it more accessible to them.
Right. More accessible, understandable. It's approachable. It's not as scary, some of the words, you know, the names and stuff. So, yeah, that's what we've discovered, and we've tried to play that in. Once we grab someone's attention and they've actually tried it, then we start introducing them to other things that are a little bit more exotic, out of their comfort zone, and then we get them hooked. Or like we like to think we get them hooked.
We hope, yeah. Well, and we also, we've kind of developed the brand a little bit since we opened the truck back in 2014 with the Easton Public Market location. We now call ourselves Egyptian-inspired cuisine. And the reason for that is... we wanted to allow ourselves some flexibility so we can put in curries and we can put in more African dishes, not just specifically Egyptian. We can play with the food a little bit more and do some fusion. We've even done some Asian style bowls with Egyptian flavors. So
we've even gone as far as our nachos.
We have
Egyptian nachos, which is our, it's our signature chicken or beef, and we have our own homemade pita chips, and we just put our own flavors to it. And interestingly enough, it was named top five in the Lehigh Valley by Discover Lehigh.
So there's places like, you know, a cheesesteak place, and then and Stuff to the Grills has nachos that are ranked in the top five. An Egyptian place that has Egyptian nachos, yeah.
But no matter what, you have to have the top Egyptian nachos in the whole Lehigh Valley, right?
Different.
I did read on your website that you both have traveled extensively. Yes. I guess 40 different countries.
Right.
I would imagine that helps when you're looking to expand the boundaries a little bit of your cuisine.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Hala has lived all over the world. I've lived and not lived, but taught all over the world and traveled quite a bit. I go to Asia a lot, so I'm actually, you know, we had thrown around the idea of starting a second truck, just noodles, you know, like an Asian noodle truck. We since have shelved that for now, since we want to expand more of the brick and mortar fast casuals, into various cities like Philly and maybe Boston. But the idea was, you know, with the travel, we were trying to get people to understand that our food is not just Egyptian. It's really kind of a mix of a lot of different flavors that we've experienced over the years. And we try to incorporate that. So, of course, sometimes that doesn't go over well with Egyptians who come to eat from our location.
Right,
they might say, this doesn't taste like my home food. And we say, well, it's Egyptian inspired. You know, it's got the Egyptian base, and then we add our own flavors to it. So
let's talk a little bit about the comparing and contrasting having a physical brick and mortar spot in the Easton Public Market versus where you started with the Taza truck, food truck. What are some of the differences or some of the similarities between the two different places people can get your food?
Well, the food truck, the Taza truck, it's a different animal, so to speak, whereas expectations are very different from customers. So when people see a food truck, they expect that they can get their food in 5 minutes or less, whereas without the understanding that we still make everything fresh on the truck. So if you want a fresh shawarma sandwich, which is a pita wrap, it still will take time to make. We just don't you know, have them ready and just throw them out. We grill our chicken fresh. We grill our beef fresh, our falafel, all of that. So to accommodate the customer's needs or their expectations, we have dropped down our menu to 5-6 items, and it's basically sandwich based and some rice bowls based, because some people have just, who followed us over the years, have expected that that's what they're going to find. Whereas in the Taza stop in the brick and mortar, it is a more of an expanded menu where you can get a lot more variety. So that's the difference. Right. And that's how that, we started the truck with a huge menu, and as the years came back, we just kind of like tapered it down. Trimmed it down to meet the customer's expectations, to keep up the quality and consistency that we are very nitpicky about.
But in the market, someone can place an order, do a lap or two, get some chocolates from JP, get some other things, and enjoy the whole experience.
But when you have and when you have a food truck and you're there for the lunch hour, people only have half an hour to grab something to eat. So we try to accommodate those needs and work in that. And it's different if you're there for a lunch hour or if it's a food truck festival where it's 5-6 hours, people are more relaxed.
Right. I was going to say the demographics change with the truck. Every time we go to new locations, it slightly different demographics kind of affect our menu. So we say, well, we're going to a brewery tonight. It's going to be more of a beef location. Or we're going to a festival like Veg Fest in Bethlehem. It's all vegetarian. It's all vegan and vegetarian. So we don't do that at the stop because the stop has a set menu. But the truck, the beauty of the truck is we can flex that menu. We do a lot of catering now with the truck. So people hire us. It's a big thing now to have a truck at a wedding receptions. It's a little bit cheaper. It's more fast casual, which is what people want. They're less formal and they're, you know, younger people are less formal in their weddings. So we can, but again, with that, we can actually have more items that are focused on what the client wants, what the customer wants. And that's kind of the beauty of the truck. Whereas the stop, we have a published menu, right? This is the menu. We don't veer from it. And, you know, we try to just make sure that the people in the area enjoy and like the food at the stop. So.
Now, you were one of the first food trucks in greater Lehigh Valley. And I've done a little traveling myself around the states, and I'm going to Austin and Portland. Right. You'd see these just huge food
pods.
Trucks everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it came to the valley, and there was the Taza truck, but now there are other ones that are coming out as well. Mm-hmm. Talk about how that food truck scene is evolving right here, and if there's still some room for growth and expansion, or where we're at with things.
So there's two things. When we started, there was Trixie's Treats, Bad Bones Barbecue, and us. There was one other truck that had shut down the year after we opened. They moved away. But essentially, the reason there weren't a lot of food trucks is because ordinances really weren't supportive of trucks parking on the street. And we didn't really know that when we opened. We thought we could push the boundaries on that.
Mm-hmm.
So we and Tracy Matthews from Trixie's Treats started the Lehigh Valley Mobile Food Alliance to try to, you know, build some recognition into food trucking. And since that has happened, now there's 35 members in that group.
Wow.
It still doesn't mean that everybody can park right on the street, but there's movement towards the city's accepting trucks more now. The second thing is we also teach a food truck course at NCC. So as part of the recognition of being one of the first trucks, they contacted us, and now we're helping new truck owners figure out the process of starting a truck, which we didn't have any clue of when we first started.
Right. And it's a three-part seminar. And the first seminar is more of a reality check because food trucking, you know, the way TV makes it, it's like it's all Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
You just pull up anywhere and make money.
Yeah, it's a hard job. And a lot of people who start food trucks close down within the first year because it's harder than a brick and mortar from every aspect.
Yeah.
And what were some of those lessons that you learned in the first year out there that you probably pass along to people now in the classes?
Yeah. I mean, one of the big things is you can't just pull up anywhere and park and serve food. The second thing is food trucks are not $1 million a year business. You don't make the money that you think you're going to make. It's a seven month business in the Northeast, 6 to 7 month business. The weather can affect it. You know, this year was really hot. So a lot of the food trucks, we were down 20% this year in the food truck, whereas the stop was better because it was cooler inside. There was air conditioning. So it's just some of the things that you don't realize that you, when you have a static kitchen where you can turn on the gas, turn on the water, everything works. Generator, you don't have to turn on a generator. You don't have to fuel up a generator. Those are the things that we sort of shock new wannabe food truck owners with is, you know, are you sure, you know, even though it's a little bit cheaper to get into, are you sure this is what you want to do? Because these are all the challenges that you face.
Yeah, because when you own a food truck, you're a mechanic. You are a cook. You are marketing. You are accounting. You are every aspect.
Customer service.
You are every aspect of the business. And you could be all set to go to an event, and your generator shuts down.
Right.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
You can't call PP&L to figure out why your electric's not working. It's not working. You have to fix it.
And it needs to be more than just about preparing the food. You can't be a faceless chef back in the kitchen.
That is a given.
Being a chef and having good food, that is one of the basic things. Everything else is something very fluid. It's not set in stone. You will always deal with challenges. Your truck overheats. Your tire pops.
These all have happened to us, too, on the way to locations.
Your gas, you run out of propane in your generator, and there was a miscalculation.
Right.
Well, I'm glad you've survived all these mishaps over the years.
We have.
Tim and Hala, thank you for joining us on The Inside Dish. Best of luck for continued success at the Easton Public Market and wherever you take the truck.
Thank you so much, Michael.
And thank you all for being at the table with us for The Inside Dish. Join us again next month when we'll continue our exploration of the region's diverse and growing food scene with two new guests. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is Lehigh Valley Art Salon.